Hey Tiger, this podcast contains language and explicit themes. Friends, lovers, foes, welcome back to the pod, or welcome in for any first timers. You'll find welcome material by the door and you're encouraged to share if you feel moved to do so. Just kidding, this isn't a 12-step meeting. This is my podcast and I'm the only voice here in this echo chamber. I'm your host, Sophia, and you're listening to This Body, a podcast about being in a body. The body, the abode of your soul. You're living in it. You can't escape it until it escapes you. It's just a lease, you know? So you might as well try and get comfortable. How is your soul today, or this evening, or whenever you're listening? Is it at rest? Is it troubled? You're forgiven by me if this pod finds you in a state of disarray, as it does me. What a shit show this year. Wow. It continues. OMG. My body is out of whack, but I just did a good yoga class, which helped. You know, you never regret going to yoga. Always helps to quell the dread. I'm just hating the news right now, aren't you? I don't know when I'll be releasing this episode, but as of now, we've just had the most disgraceful moment. I'm talking about Vladimir Zelensky, leader of the Ukraine, having the disgusting obligation of visiting with this country's so-called leader the other day. It went very poorly. I just feel so broken and so sorry that Zelensky had to go through that. I mean, I know he's a strong man. He was elected by his people for his ability to lead and to deal with this, though they could not have ever foreseen these circumstances when they elected Mr. Zelensky. But I just feel so sad for him and his people. They've been through so much losses and heartaches and ongoing tragedy and trauma. And for Trump, a man who was too scared to actually defend his country, remember the bone spurs incident? Aww. Or pay his share of taxes. Remember that year he declared $700? Yeah, I pay more tax than that. Fucked up and nothing to believe in. It is a sad and revolting time that we find ourselves in, when a person who should be received with empathy, concern, and allyship is thrown out of the White House like an episode of the fucking Orange County Housewives.
That's my opinion!
Trump is like Tamra, come to think of it. They're the same color. They both lack empathy and they like to blame everyone but themselves for literally everything. And they're both bitches.
Guys love asking where the bitches are at, but they never look inside themselves. Like, they're right in there. Just look.
I'm still holed up in the high des, though today I'm coming to you from the low des, Palm Springs, California, where I am situating myself for today's creative works. I like it here. It's very agreeable to my harried mind and my summer soul. Blue skies, lots of artificially irrigated gardens in the middle of the dry-ass desert. I'm in a neighborhood called the Movie Colony. It was developed in the 1930s and 40s because contracts with Hollywood production houses had morals clauses in them. So stars that signed to them couldn't smoke or drink or date people they wanted to within a 50-mile radius of Los Angeles. So Palm Springs became that place where everyone could let their hair down. Both locals and celebs were in on the joke. It is a beautiful, amazing neighborhood these days. There's only about 170 houses here. All of them are either mid-century modern masterpieces or Spanish revivals. I have my heart set on finding a pool house to rent out here, but I'm sure my heart's desire will be ignored by bitchy old God. I tried to make some deals with God when I was talking to they, them in the shower yesterday. So I moved out of my place in Altadena. It took 9 hours. One Ukrainian, one Russian, and one Kiwi, me. One truck to get the job done. The movers, these two young guys from the Ukraine and Russia, respectively, they had such a cool rapport. They laughed and talked between themselves all day. The Ukrainian guy was a ballet dancer and had just finished a big production in a Belarus company located in LA. And once again, I was reminded of how ballsy and hardworking the immigrant population of America is. I stored my things here in the desert. The guy in charge of the storage place was wearing a dark MAGA hat. I didn't actually know what that was until my friend Casey looked it up. It's like a black hat with a black American flag on it, as if it's not dark enough already over here. And he just couldn't stop with the weird fears, like making jokes about how immigrants are taking over and he hopes they came here legally. Even down to like being annoyed at people who have funky colored hair. Yeah. Okay. But we made it through. We made it through. And when it was all over and I had cried a bucket of tears, I was in the shower remarking to the Lord that, contrary to what I thought, that at the end of this move, I'd be absolutely shattered on every level. I, in fact, felt remarkably relaxed and momentarily almost pain-free. This came after a variety of physical ailments assailed me, starting on evacuation night. Nerve pain in my foot, twisted feeling in the back of my knee, a tingling in my upper back and shoulder, to name just a few. I've been wearing a knee brace since then, and I really anticipated being laid up after this move. But after all was said and done, so much of my pain and tension was gone. And it felt so miraculous that I started counting my blessings, which of course has the effect of quelling anxiety, so that's really great. I went on and on because it felt so good to feel that panic leaving my body. And then I thanked the universe or whomever, whatever, for all the grace extended to me. And that's when I started bargaining. How about, seeing as how you always save my ass from total annihilation at the 11th hour, God, how about you extend the same courtesy to everyone who lost things in these fires? And how about while you're at it, you take the grace and rain it over every soul living in bombed out homes in Gaza? Fuck, while you're at it, why not just share it around to all living beings? Loka samasta sukino bhavantu. May all beings be happy and free. May suffering belong to no one. May our words, thoughts, and deeds go toward this end. That's a yogic saying you might hear yoga teachers say at the end of class. 2025 is just too much. But you know, there are still ways and means to navigate this uncharted territory. And that's why I do yoga. That's why we have routines and rituals and things that stretch beyond this day and age and connect us to something a little bit bigger. And so we resolutely march onwards, following the cartography of the maps we are just literally making up on the fly. We must save ourselves because ain't nobody coming to do that for us. And with that said, welcome back to Yoga Ethics for Modern Living. Can you believe it? We did all the yummers. So if this is your first time listening, I suggest going back to those, back in the feed a little bit, and start with the episode titled Ahimsa, because today we're approaching the niyamas. So it's worth pulling back a bit and mentioning something about physical yoga. Physical yoga postures are called asana, and we will get to that. Asana is a Sanskrit word, which, by the way, in case I haven't mentioned it, Sanskrit is the language of yoga. Every word you hear relating to yoga is in Sanskrit. Sanskrit is one of the oldest languages in the world, dating back to like the second millennium BC. It came out of South Asia in the late Bronze Age. Can't even imagine like the Bronze Age. That's why this is Yoga Ethics for Modern Living. Because if we try to apply these ethics in a really classical sense to 2025, I mean, it's really, really out of context, isn't it? Anyway, yeah, Bronze Age. Sanskrit is the sacred language of Hinduism, the language of classical Hindu philosophy, and the historical texts of Buddhism and Jainism. So Jainism is like, it is Buddhism, but it is more, it's more ahimsa vibes, more non-violent even. People who follow that religion, they don't want to like kill a single thing. So they sweep the ground in front of them and make sure that they're not stepping on bugs and prostrate themselves in front of God if they accidentally kill something. It's very extreme and it's very beautiful and it's very old. Anywho, Sanskrit and its history, very interesting. And if you want a break from doom scrolling, you could look at the wiki page on Sanskrit and then you feel like you haven't wasted your evening. Hooray! Niyama is a Sanskrit word that means rules, rules, observances, or practices of self-restraint. In yoga, it's the second limb of the eight limbs of yoga and it's considered a recommended practice for daily living. Whereas the yamas are concerned with how we treat other people, the niyamas are concerned with our own behavior and practices. And the way that I've remembered it is the way that my friend Nora taught it to me. The yamas are for out, you know, like outside, the way we treat other people. And then niyama is like miyama, how I'm concerned with myself. So the first niyama, shausha. Shausha. I looked that up so many times to make sure that I wasn't going to bungle the word, S-A-U-C-H-A, shausha, purity of body and mind. So the timing of this could not be better for me. Just been forced out of my home, forced to store all my belongings yet again. And in doing so, I was confronted with more stuff than I thought I had again. Over the past few years, I've accumulated things that I maybe don't really need, had and still have the irritating task of clearing away these extraneous things. And that's the physical part. Shausha is concerned with bodily cleanliness and observing order and purity in our environment. So our homes, our wardrobes, our bedrooms, the car, all that solid, tangible stuff that inside of yoga is called prakriti. That is something that we'll get into in another episode because it's a little bit complicated and involved. Prakriti and purusha. Prakriti is everything to do with the physical world. Purusha is like your spiritual seed. Anywho, let's put a pin in that and come back to it. But anyway, yes, our homes, our wardrobes, bedrooms, the car, tangible stuff. And then there's the mental aspect, purity of thought, of intentions and emotions. It's like examining the intention behind what you think or what you say or do. and practicing mindfulness and self-love. Now, the other day I saw the news that Jeff Bezos has instructed journalists at the Washington Post, which I guess he must own, that going forward, the Post will be writing every day in support and defense of two pillars, personal liberties and free markets. He said that outlets like the Post might have once had the responsibility to bring a broad-based opinion section to the public, like what you would expect if a newspaper is called The Washington Post, as opposed to Jeff Bezos Magazine. But today, he just reckons that, nah, he doesn't have to do that anymore. Journalism, he doesn't give a shit about it. He can just define what journalism is. So I mention this as just an example of the hourly onslaught of disgusting, distracting, impure noise that we're being assaulted with in this fucked new America. We've been here for a while. It is almost impossible some days to win at this game of trying to stay mentally healthy, even a little portion of the time, because we need to know some information. The way information is being disseminated these days makes it all the more confusing. But we do have some tools at our disposal. Yogic and spiritual practices help. Breathing exercises help. Meditation helps. Self-discipline, huge. The place I find myself in now, like quite literally taking things one step at a time after the Eden fire, it is humbling and revealing of how long the journey is going to be and how managing my energy is, it's probably never been more essential. I just don't have very much of it. It needs to be protected. I need to funnel it into places that is going to support the growth of more of that energy rather than deplete me. A lot of choices about like fucking around with my energy have been taken away from me just because I don't have that much of it. So I'm kind of leaving the news alone and just letting it find me, because it does. Every few hours I hear about some bonkers stuff the president is doing, or those other guys who just suck, who have all the power. But, you know, how much can a bitch take? It's a battle royale. We're not going to win by wallowing in the news or in fake self-care like ASMR or a 19-step Korean skincare routine, or like doom scrolling in bed while you just rot. This, the spiritual path, is a journey of growth and discomfort that will eventually lead to some relief in the larger scheme of things. Hopefully. No, I can speak on it. I can speak on it for sure. It's just that we're in some uncharted terrain and it's frightening. I just don't really know what's going to happen. But this is a good path to be on. Might as well pick a path and walk down it. According to Vyasa, a sage who allegedly wrote the Yoga Sutras for another guy called Patanjali, who was apparently half a snake and half human and therefore couldn't write it himself, I suppose. Actually, I might have that mixed up. There's also the idea that they both wrote different parts of the sutras, Vyasa and Patanjali, and then like another guy called Vyasa. But you know how these religious texts go. It's all very, who knows really, like the disciples and who gets to talk in the Bible and who doesn't get a book. But if you follow along with the yamas and niyamas, they do provide a framework for a peaceful life. And if you're anything like me, you're willing to try anything in 2025 to achieve a peaceful, grounded existence.
Does anybody remember laughter?
So it kind of goes without saying that having an organized mind, an organized, clean, and pleasing space, and having a shower every day fosters a better life in general. And that's essentially what Shaosha is: purity of mind, body, and environment. It goes a lot deeper than that. The sutra itself has some very interesting words and an interesting take, or maybe like a really old school straight male take on the body, as in like the only way to gain some agency over the body and not be so enamored with sex and the pleasures of the body, is to be constantly reminded that the body is really gross and that you should be quite disgusted by it. Once more, that's Bronze Age energy. And it's not what I'm talking about now, but I am going to put a link in the show notes to a video that is a really good jumping off point for those more inclined towards just like the classical history. When I was doing my 200-hour yoga teacher training, we obviously were doing a ton of asana and meditation, and it allowed me to observe my reactions to the Yoga Sutras. So when we discussed like rules and regulations, I was able to notice both my resistance to the idea of these disciplines, like, oh, purity, oh my God, please. Like so much of our society is all about guilt and shame, and the word purity is very tied up in that in the English language, like purity rings, purity dances where virgins dance with their fathers. So basically, I was able to observe my rebellious nature, to kick back, to tell people to get off my neck. But I also observed a calm that sort of enveloped me, this affinity and enjoyment with the boundaries and the scaffoldings of these teachings. And I could see that I could build upon what I already had, that rebel mentality, which is obviously closely associated with youth and young adulthood, and add some more strength to it. I hope that makes sense. Like, we don't have to disavow ourselves to practice shausha, to practice purity. It's like a coming home to the self. Our mind, our body, our physical environment is our home. And when you have that in mind, you'll always have a little something that can't be taken from you, not even in a fire, not even in solitary confinement, I'm told. Something that cannot be taken from you. The flip side in our neurotic modern society is that us modern humans tend to get a bit OCD if just given the mere suggestion, you know? For example, many people tend towards unhealthy eating patterns, right? Like disordered eating has a lot to do with control, counting calories, being restrictive. And that's obviously very negative and can have devastating consequences on lives. It also doesn't foster a lasting sense of calm and boundaries, which is why it's disordered. There's like a really fine line between order and disorder. And it's the same with a clean space. This is something that I've been noticing in myself a lot lately. I like to wipe surfaces down. I am intensely sensitive to bad smells. And when I'm kind of spiraling, like when my life feels out of control, like now, I can start to sort of spin around in my life and clean this and wipe that and organize that. And this often just leads to exhaustion and a sense of pending mania, which actually is a really out of control feeling. And then once that happens, it starts to get really existential. Like, what is the point in any of this? We all die. Life is so frightening. Oh my God. Etc. and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I remember her saying, I'm already dead. 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 I'm already dead.
Well, today I want you each to stand up and hold your hands in some stupid single.
I'm already dead.
You're going to get up and scream.
I'm already dead. I'm already dead.
You're going to get up and burn an X in your head.
And that brings me to fear-based decision-making. I've been listening to a podcast, I would say like against my will, though nobody's forcing me to do it except myself. I guess that is a example of being able to observe one's life from a distance and know that you need to like intervene and help out a little bit. So I've been listening to this podcast for my betterment called Women and Money, by Susie Ormond. And Susie, you might know that name. She's been at the money game probably longer than I've been alive. I think she's like late 70s now. She seems to have a really good life. She has a wife and they live like in Florida or like, no, the Bahamas, which is so much better. And they just seem to have such an awesome life and just a shit ton of money. So I'm about that. I personally at 45 do need to start broadening my knowledge about my finances. I tend to act intuitively around money, and that's had some pretty good results, but I know very little about stocks and shares. And with the current state of the world, my favored and tried and true investment safe haven, which I always really believed in, real estate, it's not the safest of havens right now or for the foreseeable future. How does this make me feel? Scared, very, very scared. Like I don't know, I don't have the knowledge, so I'm going to get the knowledge. I have a lot of fear about my future and our future as a species on this planet. See, this is how I spiral. Next minute, I'll be wiping surfaces and thinking in vague terms about how much debt I'm in, and eventually I'll have to take some sort of nervous medication that I prefer to take for fun, not necessity. Susie Orman's golden rule is to not operate from a place of fear when it comes to finances. And that's really like the number one rule of sanity. Feel the fear, of course, but don't operate from that place, because bad decisions are made out of fear. Money is lost out of fear. In her latest episode, Susie talked about the stock market and like the energy in the world and how it's like very, it's very ephemeral the way the stock market responds to energy. Oh my gosh, you guys, if you like this show, you should join me over on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/thisbodypodcast and join up for Extra Body. You'll get early access to episodes, 2 bonus episodes a month, random drops here and there, and access to old seasons. So people make moves with their money, and that shapes what the stock market is doing and reflecting. And when people are afraid because of like the government and wars and global warming and just all that stuff, the market goes down. People act more conservatively. And the annoying thing is, it's not really a true reflection of what's available, of what is actually on the table. Just because we feel threatened, just because the world is crumbling around us, doesn't mean that there isn't money to be made or life to live and things to enjoy and pleasure that is available. Life is a ball game, and fear is not a strategy. When I try to outrun my problems by buying expensive groceries at Erewhon or buying shit I don't really need but is nice and shows up in lots of packaging with a massive carbon footprint from fucking Amazon, this is fear-based decision making, and that feeds into my anxiety. It's like Ayurveda in that way, unconscious Ayurveda, like attracting like. If you don't know, Ayurveda is like the medical and wellness arm of yoga. It's like the Indian version of Chinese medicine. You know what I mean? Yoga is super broad. There's a system for anything that you can think of. And Ayurveda is like about food and doshas. Okay. I'm going to get off track if I start talking about doshas. But as you can tell, I'm not teaching you traditional classical yoga in these podcasts, and that's why it's for modern living. But if you, again, if you find it interesting and you do want to go into the sutras or get more formal, I will leave that video on the show notes. You can use it as a jump-off point for that investigation. I didn't live in the Bronze Age. I wasn't raised Hindu, so this is a different point of view, almost a different modality, really. So yeah, check the show notes for that video. But back to fear-based decisions. It's obviously a huge challenge not to move from fear. Using my life as the template, a case study, the neighborhood burnt to the ground. Many people and animals died. My heart has never been more broken. honestly. And I've never been more activated in my reptile brain on a primal level, like fight, flight, freeze, all of that. I am pleased to report that when it comes down to it, or came down to it, I could trust my instincts. Yay for that. But I keep thinking about the hours and the days after I escaped Pasadena, Altadena. And I was literally just sitting pretty catatonic on a beanbag here with my animals all just like tucked around me, and they were sleeping and we were safe. And I kept like thanking the universe and feeling just shattered and lucky. I wanted for nothing for myself because I knew I had absolutely everything I needed and so, so many thousands of others did not have that. After a little bit of time had passed, fear started to creep in. A different kind of fear, less of the immediate and more of like the all-encompassing, you know? And yeah, that's what gave me the neurotic cleaning sprees. I'm concerned about things that actually are a concern, yes, but not to the extent where I should allow my body, mind, and thoughts to be carried off on a wild goose chase that I can actually control. Purity of mind, shausha, how, meditation, movement, and meditation. The point of yoga, the goal of yoga is meditation. And purity, shausha, purity of thought, can be achieved or gotten closer to, at least, through meditation. Because when you're in meditation, you start to see you, the doer, and you, the observer. You sort of split. You can see yourself thinking. You can see the thoughts from a distance. That gives you perspective and clarity. It's exactly like observing clouds moving through the sky or watching the horizon. That's another thing that is really, really useful for the brain, to actually look at the horizon or faraway objects in the distance. Especially if you're screen bound at the moment, look up, look out, let your eyes adjust to that, let your optic nerve adjust, let your brain adjust, look into your future, and now appreciate your present. I could talk about the benefits of meditation for literally years, and people do, but it's just one of those simple things that, in my opinion, doesn't need to be expounded upon, at least not by me here. I'm just giving you some info. You can do your research, mama. When it comes to shausha, our first niyama, it's like clean the house. You'll feel better. Things will be easier. Fill the car with gas. It'll take you to your destinations. Clean your garbage-filled mind with daily meditation, and you will have space for more delightful things. And wash your filthy mouth out with soap. And that's it. Here's what David Lynch said to a TMZ reporter about it.
Is meditation better than yoga?
Meditation is yoga. Okay. Yoga means union. And union with what? Union with the divine, the deepest level of life, the highest level of life, union.
Okay, one last question. Do you think a mixture of meditation and marijuana is a good combo?
When you do transcendental meditation, you don't have to give up anything. You just add that to your life. If you like to smoke marijuana, you smoke that. If you like to climb mountains, you climb mountains. Just add meditation to your life.
Have a nice night.
Shausha out in the wild could look like bringing your keep cup to the coffee shop. Now, I know that one person isn't going to stop plastic washing out to sea and joining up with Trash Island, but actually, you know what? Sometimes one person does pop up and change the world.
Sometimes you gotta pop out and show niggas.
And another thing is, it sure makes me feel like less of an adult baby to bring my own cup to the coffee shop rather than get one of their adult sippy cups, use it once, and throw it away. I am better than that, and so are you. We all deserve better than that. I want to hold myself to a high standard for my own damn sake. It's like the female gaze. Like, I get dressed in the morning.
I put a little makeup on if I want to. It's for me. It's not like for them. It's not for the outside world. Do it for your own sake. Maybe that will also lighten the load on the earth. Like Jain Buddhism, you know, you don't have to sweep every ant away from underfoot to avoid stepping on them. You can just get a keep cup.
Babes, if you enjoy this podcast, be sure to rate, share, and subscribe. You can listen on Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Music. And you can find me at Sophia Forever, the pods on IG too. Thanks, Tiger. Oh,